Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. My friend, I trust you're doing well.
I'm here.
You're here. That's fantastic.
Never fear. I'm here ready to rock and roll.
Still in sunny California.
Don't hold that against me. I'm really an okay guy.
No. I love LA. It's a love-hate relationship. But for those of you who are tuning in, thanks as always. And you know where to find us because you're obviously listening to us. But if you would like to recommend this podcast, tell your friends and family and whoever, or your enemies, that you can find us on pretty much every platform, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, Podomatic, FM. Am I missing any? YouTube?
I don't think we have a spot on the Playboy channel yet.
No, not yet. That'd be weird. I mean, it'd be cool, but be weird.
We should buy the mansion, let that be our headquarters.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine how, I mean, just see, just the heathenry, the revelry.
Gosh. Well,
Keith Richards caught the bathroom on fire there once.
I believe it. Oh, my God.
Probably shooting up.
Possibly. There's a greater statistical probability that he was doing some sort of drugs than not.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't, he was already under the influence.
Keith Richards in a locked bathroom and accidentally sets it on fire.
Dude, so there's a story in Keith Richards. I don't know, the complete tangent here, but before we start, there was a Keith Richards' autobiography. He talks about this story. I don't know if he was with Ronnie Wood. I don't think it was Mick Jagger. I think it was Ronnie Wood. And they were doing a tour through the Bible Belt. And basically what he was saying is, like, every town, the sheriff wanted a reason to arrest them because obviously that's great publicity. And, you know, it's those long-haired, hippie, anti-counterculture, you know, sinners. So he tells a story. They're driving through the town. The cop pulls him over, and they impound the car, but they need a search warrant in order to go in the car. And Keith Richards literally says something along the lines in the book. He said, "We were kind of freaking out because there was pharmaceutical grade cocaine in, like, the glove compartment." So they're like waiting in the police station for the judge was playing golf or something.
It's in Fordyce, Arkansas, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think maybe that's right. It was either Arkansas or Mississippi. And they're waiting.
The place where they were about to riot?
Yep. So they're waiting for this search warrant, and basically, like, it's this massive protest outside of the police station. I don't remember if it was in favor of the Rolling Stones or not. I think it was in favor of the Rolling Stones. So now it was going to be this PR nightmare. And they basically had, I guess, a bunch of pills and stuff on them, and they went into the bathroom, and they talk about just trying to, like, do all the drugs, and they wind up spilling the pills all over the bathroom floor.
They end up doing a photo op with the judge.
They wind up doing a photo op with the judge, who then at night finally – it was just a hilarious story that I completely butchered, but
– No, it's like, but what a fiasco.
What a fiasco. And Keith Richards doing drugs. That was the entire point of that. So speaking of American culture
– America.
This is hopefully going to be an somewhat articulate podcast episode, but this sort of stems from a podcast that I listened to on We the People Live. The host, Josh Zepps, was actually doing a podcast with Kyle Kulinski, who's a progressive talk show host on YouTube. I think he does the one called Secular Talk, I believe. Anyway, the whole point of the podcast was – or not the a point from that episode was talking about culture in America and how culture probably drives more of who. Well, I mean, this sounds like a duh type of comment that I'm making here.
We have culture in America.
Yes, we do. We have culture. Culture is not defined as a thing, but it is not one thing. It is not fixed. It is whatever the makeup of the people is. So,
looky cookie at you, man of the people.
Yeah, you know me, man of the people. So the question brought up, why is it that people continue to vote for people like Donald Trump? Why is it that centrist individuals or moderates swing right? What is the point here? How is this happening? How does it seem that the average Joe of America continues to vote against his best interest by letting corporations take tax cuts, Supreme Court justices that have a swing vote, and then let corporations have eminent domain on your property? Why do they keep doing this? And obviously, this is coming from a fairly left perspective. If you don't know Josh Zepps or Kyle Klinsky, they're fairly progressive liberal individuals.
Yeah.
So the question again was brought up from, I think Josh Zepps is Australian, so he kind of has the perspective from the Commonwealth countries and from Europe, who are a little bit more social than we are, and they. He notes that they tend to, or I should say they, but Europe and the Commonwealth countries look at America with a little bit of bewilderment and the culture overall in America. So obviously there's quite a bit more overall social policies in Europe and in New Zealand and Australia than
that
there are
in I
America.
Will give him. I think this is – I think America takes the cake on – the weird factor, like most confusing nation.
Yes. And that's not that what's funny is it's not really because it's some melting pot and it's so diverse. We really do have these two hard stops. We've got the Democratic Party and we have the Republican Party. And we've got this weird two-party system that we can't seem to break out of because they basically control the platforms in which mainstream media or airtime is given. And so it makes it very hard for new parties to pop up, etc. So the question then is, how do you pick? Like, what's the? It's essentially comes down for moderates or centrists or independents to pick the lesser of the two evils. Because if you're very conscious,
you vote against Hillary Clinton,
right? So if you're fairly conscious as a voter, you're probably not. Or if you're independent, you're moderate. You're going.
But that's
to,
what you're getting at, though, right? The people that they more voted against Hillary Clinton than
yes,
they did.
Yes. So the people that they thought were going to swing left, swung right. And we can talk about the fact that she didn't campaign in Michigan, et cetera, and that probably played
yes,
a little bit of a role.
Yeah. What would a day be without a daily recap of the 2016 presidential election?
What would it be? I don't know. I don't know. But the point being, I think it goes beyond that. It goes beyond
Jesus. Every day.
It goes beyond just Hillary Clinton not campaigning in Michigan. And it goes down to what people are hearing and what they want. And one thing we do know in this culture in America is that, and it's different from other places, but, and these aren't inherently bad virtues to have, but what we do have in America are things like pull yourself up by your bootstraps, rags to riches, that's the land of opportunity. And it is. He brought up a good point in the podcast where he said, there aren't too many other places in the westernized world where someone like Barack Obama would rise up from living in Chicago and becoming the president of the United States and the first African American. So I can see that. Yes, it's very true. However, when you start to look at what we value in this country, things start to change a little bit. Things are a little different.
If you want to know what we value, look at the dollar voting, where the almighty dollar goes.
Yeah. I mean, well, for example, we like rich people in the United States. We do. We
everybody likes a winner.
Everyone likes a winner. And as for example, Kylie Jenner or Kylie Kardashian, which one is it?
I don't care.
I don't know which one she goes by. Just made Forbes front cover as the, I don't know if she's a first, but I think it's probably the first quote unquote self-made billionaire woman.
She was on Forbes?
Forbes cover.
So what are they really emphasizing their presence in the dental lobby?
The dental lobby.
Mark,
well,
now, I mean, is that where most of their readership comes from here?
I have
Kylie Jenner.
Yeah. So she was the I don't know if it was the first of something or whatever. But anyway, 20-year-old, almost billionaire, $900 million. So
I'm sure plenty of people, many people, have told her what she's the first of in their heart.
Gosh. Well, apparently a lot of people like her because a GoFundMe was created to raise $100 million to actually make $1 billion. To which I said, is this what we are valuing? Because it's the problem that I have. Well, I've got a huge, massive problem with all of that. But the point of idolizing riches in this country is that the reality for most people to make it from the lowest percentile to the highest percentile is nearly impossible. You do see it with people like Oprah Winfrey. You do see your athletes that make it. You do see celebrities and musicians that make it. But that is a small statistical number out of the greater population. Yet we do worship these type of people. So the question then is, how does that type of cultural, that how is that relevant in today's voting? How is that relevant today in DC and in our state legislators, etc.? So I think we did a podcast earlier about how the Democrats need to essentially reframe their narrative in order to get
it
more
votes.
It looks
like they're not gonna, man.
We've made that prediction on here, and it's a very true possibility. And where
this is about the time frame we mentioned too, mid to late July. Yep. This is going to start taking shape. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, when did listenership and readership suddenly tick up?
Yeah, it's true.
Right after the holiday.
So let's what I would like to preface is that, yeah, they might make it this time. Might not be the Senate, might be Congress. But my fear is that we're sort of rallying. The American people, or the people that are anti-Trump, are sort of rallying because of Trump, be anti-Trump. And then it might happen one-off on this election cycle, this weird midterm that we see where Democrats retake, but then the momentum is lost because we got it back. And then there's nothing else to bitch about. There's less to bitch about. And when there's less to be complaining about, people don't show up. So there's a potential that there's a momentum wave and then it peters off. And I think this comes down to what part of culturally, what the cultural issue that we have, and how does that pertain to Democrats? So what you hear from, well, let me rephrase this. So I did a podcast that I just dropped 2 podcasts ago with my dad. And it was about growing up in Detroit, essentially. It was supposed to be about the Rust Belt, but it turned out to be what it was like growing up in Detroit and what it means for people that grew up in the 60s and 70s and had parents that grew up in the 60s and 70s, what that was. And that Make America Great Again is a very genuine Make America Great Again. It's not Donald Trump Make America Great Again. It is pining for a time when there was less wealth inequality, when one person could provide for their entire family and have a nice living and retire. And obviously times have changed where you see massive wealth inequality, you see a living wage that hasn't caught up for decades, and you see people with tens of thousands of dollars in debt just to be able to get the entry-level job, to be able to just survive, save for retirement, etc.
But wait, there's hope. The very same people from whatever stripe and party that created this nightmare that we're all about to leave our grandchildren with, let's put them in charge of fixing it, shall we?
Let's do that. So this overall narrative of Make America Great Again for a lot of people isn't Trump or his administration. It's what they would like to have. And I'm not saying this on some social conservative platform like heterosexual marriage again, or traditional family values. I think for the most part, these moderate, centrist, middle of the road people are fairly apathetic to that. They don't really care one way or another about legalizing cannabis. They don't care who gets married. But what they do care about is the basic Maslow's hierarchy of needs that pertains to 2018. That's being able to pay the bills, to have shelter, to have food and water, to be able to raise your kids. These are very important things, to maintain relationships. And it evolves into what is today in 2018. So we're trying to grapple with this, and we're trying to figure out how to navigate this new climate of, like I said, wealth inequality, debt, not saving for retirement, and what needs to change. So this is what we had said in the Democratic Narrative episode, was that there's going to be a lot of people out there that aren't going to care too much, or they care, but there's priorities higher than hearing about immigration. That's hearing about well, that being one of the major topics. They're more concerned about how much more money they can put in their pocket and what that takes. What is it going to take to put more money in their pocket? Well, if you start hearing things like deregulation, that's going to put more money in your pocket. Well, if we do a tax cut, you know what? The whether or not trickle down works, the corporate tax rate drops to 21%.
Supply side economics, if you will, Mr. Nate.
Build corporations will then put more wages, will increase your wages, put more money in your pocket. There's going to be a second round of tax cuts, I think, coming up. One thing that Orrin Hatch is trying to
Why not?
Orrin Hatch is trying to push a retirement savings bill. But again, even with that, and this is a tangent aside, they're really not addressing the fact that wages haven't increased. And so they want America to be a saving nation again. But the whole point is missed. People don't have the money to save. You need the money to save. It's not like people are running out there. If they're buying anything, they're buying something because they haven't been able to do that for a long time. Anyway, that's a side point. What I'm getting back to is... maybe it was a side point.
That's sort of a central tenet of your platform, though. As a progressive, that if only those mean old haves could have their estate lessened.
not
stripped of them like a communist. I'm making a difference there.
It's not that
at the end of the day, you want more government intervention. You want more government spending because fundamentally speaking, all the hairs have been split. You believe that there is a government solution to these crises.
Well, this is where I disagree with that. I'm not saying that anything that I'm proposing right now is a warrant for increased government intervention. I think there's things we can do in terms of not necessarily. I would hope that good faith that I talked about with corporations trickling down that money to wages would be good.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I get votes to the polls. You better hope they remember.
Right. So the what I was getting at, reestablish my train of thought here, is there's these major issues of just surviving in the United States that are going to speak to that maybe moderate voter more than things like immigration and some of the other platforms that the Democratic Party is going to espouse. So whether that is building up the welfare state or not, the question then is, do I benefit from the welfare state? Do I benefit from paying?
This is where Main Street and Capitol Hill differ. Okay, the political survival is not the same thing as the survival of your household. Okay, so these folks they're creating quite a quandary for the Democrats headed into midterms because they're demanding, for instance, from a macro perspective, and I'm sure they would boo me out of the room for saying this. Okay, but y'all, speaking to the Democrats, are picking the wrong message if you're going if you're throwing everything at the Supreme Court nominee, that's a mistake.
Oh, 100%.
Because that's going to put the emphasis in all the wrong areas headed as a midterm issue, okay? And you're going to have a hard time finding senators like Heidi Heitkamp, Democrat from North Dakota, and then Democrat Joe Manchin of West Virginia that Trump won by over 30 points. As he'll likely remind us all again his next visit there. Okay. But the song remains the same. This was a repudiation.
Yes. But in a sense, I don't think it was necessarily, it could have been a repudiation to the establishment.
Sure, it was to the man.
Yeah. So maybe it was to the establishment. And Trump came along and said, look, screw all those guys who, and they said this, I'm giving credit a little bit to the We the People Live podcast for bringing this up, but they basically, you know, Donald Trump came in and said, you know what, screw all those guys that write policy for a living, that lobby on K Street. We're gonna drain the swamp, and we are going to look out for you, and we're gonna get back on track. And for a lot of people, again, make America great again. It wasn't that they loved Trump; they just liked that idea that we need to get back and we need to be able to bolster up this middle class. Give a living wage, etc. And this.
See, but I they lose me on that because the word "great" is being misused. Great refers to notoriety, how famous you are, not whether you're good or bad. Well, so it's like, what perspective are you? I mean, in terms of notoriety, nobody's bigger than America. We never stop being great.
I think great meaning we need to go back to a time where, I guess, whatever.
What, a more chivalrous era?
No, a more. and equitable isn't the right word, but where more, okay, the equal amount that you make. Okay, so
you a nice little map to Shangri-La.
Okay, look, the Make America Great Again is to somehow establish a future time or a time like the past,
based in a past that's never going to come again.
It's true, but I don't necessarily believe that it's completely unwarranted that someone would want to be able to do fundamentally the same with the amount of money they're making today as they could 40 years ago.
To be seniors in high school again.
That's true, but I think where people are looking back and taking such issue is that look. The top 1% has, what, 1/3 of all the wealth or a little bit more. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with being rich. The point is, rich is great, except for it makes it impossible for someone like me in the middle class who pays more in their overall income to taxes and has not had a wage increase adjusted to the standard of living.
You of all people should understand.
Understand what?
Having your lots divided and cast out amongst others.
Look, I'm.
You dream of what could be, right?
Sure, I do. And I'm not saying that my dream is this welfare state. I'm just
throwing a nod to your boy.
Yeah, okay. I'm not saying that an overall welfare state or a socialist democratic way is the way to go. What I'm hoping is that, look, this could all be mitigated going down that path by actually having the good faith from these corporations to actually trickle down that money that is saved so that that can directly go to workers.
Well, and let me just say this.
There's no federal, there's no federal intervention there at all. But when you continue to have that money go back to stock buyback, to dividends, to the shareholders, and that doesn't trickle down except for a one-time $1,000 bonus, I mean, I'm getting off rail here. Yeah. So we'll hit pause. Go ahead.
Let's hit pause here real quick. We haven't even gone through a full tax cycle under the new tax laws. Okay. So any estimates, guesstimates, whatever, are just that at this point. We don't know how future revenue is going to change. I suspect the deficit, yes, at least initially, is going to increase exponentially. But we don't know how much of that is going to trickle down into the pockets of the lay folks, because I'm not going to sit here and Bing, Google, look up stories to send you of companies that announced they were expanding their payrolls and paying more. And I'm being a classical apologist here for the tax law, but let's give it a full year at least.
Sure.
Before we say, well, it's not doing what they said it would do. Well, how do we know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what we've seen anecdotally is companies that have had stock buybacks, et cetera, that didn't necessarily trickle down. But I guess I'm losing my main point by even going down that road in the first place. I think where, if I could try to take this back to where I was before, and not because of you, but just because of my own thought process in my head here. But I think...
So you're saying it's not me, it's you.
Exactly, it's not me. It's not you, it's me, and it's the
guys.
Truth.
If she ever says that, it's definitely you,
for sure. Okay, so getting back culturally and looking at where we are moving towards the midterm elections and the real issues that matter,
we're in the midst of the filming of Caligula.
Yes, as we get closer and approach the midterms, obviously, like I said, I think we'll see major pushback on Trump himself. And I don't know how far that actually can go. But what people talk about and what people behind closed doors actually desire, I think, are sometimes two different things. And that's why opinion polls can be sort of misleading. Where will people actually vote when they have to tick the box? And what are they going to vote for? And most,
I was going to say, surely we're not going to place a lot of faith in polling.
First is some people do, some people don't. My point is,
be careful.
Yeah,
would watch the trends in that poll because remember who had a 95% chance of becoming president last November 2016.
It's true, and that's my point. And you're making that point. It's that when you actually have to vote. So when you've got politicians who are saying, like, look, we're deregulating, so that makes it easier for you to make money. We are, we're cutting out the loopholes, and we are, you know, trimming the excess fat that's here. That really resonates to people. Whether or not it works or not, that sounds a lot better than increasing taxes for a lot of programs that you're not going to see a direct benefit to. Now, if you were making a living wage...
But conversely, it's a lot better of a forecast than what the Elon Musk of the world offers, saying that all the middle class and the working class folks are worth is, you know, universal basic income. That's the extent of your future, folks.
Well, I mean, it could easily be a Band-Aid for a problem if you don't see wages increase and the standard of living it continues
to increase. That's besides the increases. Point.
It becomes more popular if those things happen. And I would like to prevent that. I don't necessarily want to see a UBI if we could fix it another way. And I don't even mean that by government intervention. Yeah, I'm not even looking at it from a government intervention standpoint. I think when
no, it's like, look at these bleak forecasts. It's like, let's all go listen to Simon and Garfunkel and the Carpenters and then kill ourselves.
Jeez. Yeah, and look, if everyone was making a living wage, if everyone was making a living wage, and we're certainly not saying that if you work at McDonald's, you should live in a mansion. That's not the point here. The point is, if you're comfortably living from the job that you are, that you enjoy doing, or maybe you don't enjoy doing.
If there's anything wrong in your life, you know who to blame.
Who's that?
President Trump.
Of course. Look, I think people would feel more altruistic about raising taxes if they were living comfortably. But the idea of raising taxes for things that they may not see a direct benefit to becomes fairly problematic. And unfortunately, the left and progressive platform does involve taking more money from a paycheck in the form of taxes. And I don't know how altruistic the average American is feeling when they're tens of thousands of dollars in debt and they're not making enough to really support themselves, save for retirement, that thing that everyone wants to get to. I just don't know how altruistic the average American feels. Now, I think in public circles, they absolutely would, because no one wants to look like the asshole. But when you're not there, you're really sort of protecting yourself. And that's why that conservative platform is fairly appealing to a lot of people who are on the fence. And I think if the Democratic narrative shifts to sensible, like actually hammering down how to make a living wage.
Yes, it's like, we get it. You dislike the president. Oh my God.
But there needs to be more substance. And this just comes down to a culture talk.
Do a song, do a dance.
So I don't know. I just think I'm not some Democratic strategist, and the whole point wasn't talking about how the Democrats, what they need to do. I think the overall point is, like, what's going on in America today and why people are voting. But, again, if you're sitting in the middle of the road and you're not going to make – you're going to make too much money where you won't be eligible for welfare programs or things like
– wake up dead, folks.
What's that?
Sitting in the middle of the road.
Yes, I mean, that would be. If you're making too much money to be, it's true. If you're ineligible for a lot of these programs, and your taxes are going to that, but you're still struggling to make ends meet, where are you going to vote, man? I mean,
well, it's a risky strategy. What the president's doing, for instance, with his base in ag country, saying, "Hey, hang in there with me." And so far, it's panned out because the markets act as though the threats, some of these tariffs haven't officially gone into effect. There's a 90-day period, but there's been no discernible effects thus far on the marketplace. They've barely blinked with all the tariffs.
There is some collateral damage.
The greater point here is that he's rolling the dice by saying, hey, hang in there with me. We're going to work something out here. And, you know, he's spending some political capital there that's surprising. Because it's doesn't tend to work out when you tell, I mean, especially in an on-demand society.
Yes.
Like we are. Americans do not like being told they need to wait for anything.
Yeah. And especially when it's money on the line
as
well.
Now.
Yeah. Especially when there's money on the line. So, you know, we'll definitely see how the tariffs and everything play out.
I mean, think about it. In modern American history, like it or not, you know, I'm reporting it. You know, I report it, you deride it. But in modern American history, we haven't had a sitting president lose without being involved in a major ground war and the economy is growing at 2.5% GDP per quarter.
Yeah.
So at this point, if this is any forecast, I mean,
yeah,
I can't imagine the shit show when they go trying to pick a name in 2020.
I mean, I think at what point will the momentum sort of die? If the Democrats retake quite a bit in the midterms, are people less likely to show up in the 2020 presidential election?
I think if you're the Democrats, you've got to push here for as much as you can.
Yeah.
Because regardless, Trump's people, ghost pollers or not, are going to be there in 2020.
Yeah, I think so. But just based on everything that I just talked about, that's where I think they show up. These are the people that show up.
By the way, something we talked about, we were right about Mitch Landrieu's name has officially, well, not officially, but it's begun circulating amongst Democratic donors. Former mayor of New Orleans, who's the former president of the National Mayor's Council. He was very well liked. And he's somebody I mentioned as a dark horse. And before everybody scoffs and says, oh, but with Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden around, yeah, don't mention Bernie's name to me again, you know, because we know that that's just not in the card, folks. Not in the cards.
No.
But Hillary and Joe are going to miss the central premise here, that the part of that party that is growing, the Democratic Socialist / Modern Progressive Wing, whatever you want to call it, I'm sure I'm insulting the people that adhere to such beliefs, but the spirit of this is just, and that is they want change in their own party. They don't want to send up a Hillary Clinton. They don't want to see that. They want to send up a Bernie Sanders. I'm going, okay, folks, can you find somebody under the age of 115 who can make it through 4 years? Okay. But you see what I'm getting at.
I do.
There's no united front here. So maybe someone for them to pick is a Mitch Landrieu.
Yeah. Someone that comes
with normal baggage.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, because who's going to beat Trump?
I mean, on the
right.
Yeah, on the Republican side, I don't know, at least at this point.
Oh, you can forget that.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, I mean, it'll definitely be, the next couple of years are going to be super interesting.
Paul Ryan knows he's going to be giving you the deuces and saying, not my problem anymore.
Nah,
not my problem.
He's going to go get into that legal weed stuff.
He's going to join John Boehner?
Yeah.
You calling it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
John Boehner goes from he made his living as a plastic salesman, goes from that to hemp. I like it.
Hey, I mean, it's more sustainable.
That's your future for
it's,
you.
It's more sustainable.
So the founding fathers did get one thing right then.
They did.
They grew hemp.
They did. They grew some weed. Maybe not weed, but definitely hemp. Allegedly, Thomas.
It's like Jesus made non-alcoholic wine. Don't you worry, folks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's awesome. So, all right, my friend, we're at 30 minutes. I got to work tomorrow, sadly, and I'm not going to belabor this point any longer, lest I start sounding really stupid. So, with that,
au revoir.